The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, we have this expression in English, a frame of mind. So sometimes people say, I wasn't in a good frame of mind. Or, now I'm in a good frame of mind and I can deal with my issues. The idea of a frame of mind, I'm not sure what people really mean, but they refer to the fact that literally it means that there's a certain context or a container or orientation or view, state of mind, with which they are relating to what goes on. So if you're in a bad frame of mind, means that the experiences of life are being received in that bad frame of mind. And then it's not so easy to deal with. And a good frame of mind means that, you're in a place where you're calm or open or receptive or wise. And so when things come in, you can kind of deal with it in a nice way. So this idea of a frame of mind is related to what I talked about earlier, that there are different viewpoints, perspectives that we bring on our experience. And we'll always have a perspective, pretty much always. I mean, sometimes when meditation goes quite deep and the mind gets very quiet and still, you could open your eyes and, it's probably fair to say that you can see without any particular usual perspective or frame. But almost always there's something that we bring. And sometimes it's deep-seated conditioning that from our life experience maybe or from our personality that come into play. So some people come into a new room, a new place, and anxiety is the framework in which they look. They're a little bit afraid. There's some things apprehensive. Who is it, people, and where am I supposed to sit, and what goes on here, and is this really okay place to be? And that's a framework. One of the frameworks is anxiety. Someone else, the framework would be to come and pleasure. They just want to have the most pleasant, enjoyable place to sit in the room. And they're looking around, where's the nicest place, And their comfortable chair and, that's the orientation. Or there might be the orientation is aversive. And so they also kind of scan the room and, where do I not going to sit? Who am I not going to sit with? To avoid. And someone else, there's all kinds of frameworks people bring and orientations. And some people, they have attitudes about certain kinds of people. And so they look, where are all the women? Or where are all the men? Or where are all the whatever? I'll sit with them or I won't sit with them or something. And sometimes we don't even know we come with an orientation, but there's a lot of gray hair in this room here today. And not in everyone, of course, but I think it's almost like the majority. And I suspect that no one here is in their early 20s. Is anybody in their early 20s here? I apologize. How old are you?
26.
20, that's not early 20s. That you? Yeah. You're over the hill. at least for someone in their 20s, you're like, you're on the... but maybe even at your age, you weren't even thinking about your age, but you come in here and like, wow, a lot of people with gray hair. Like, where are my people? I'm trying to convey to you, there's all these frameworks and orientations and views. And so when you sit down to meditate... That also happens, right? You sit down and you have certain sensations in your body and you see it through a certain vantage point. Maybe the concern would be, oh, my leg hurts. So this isn't just a painful leg. It's a painful leg and something dire is going to happen. The leg's going to fall off if I sit any longer. Or if I move, these people are not going to like me. You're not supposed to move in a Buddhist center. So you're concerned about the people. So certain interpretation of the event that we go on, or there's emotions that go on, or thoughts that we go on, and certain thoughts are really important, and we validate, and we get involved in, and we get caught up in. And So there's always some perspective, priority, preferences we have that influences how we're aware, what we pay attention to. And it's very interesting to start noticing that, to start noticing the habits and the conditioning of what we pay attention to, what we... And one of the values of meditating a lot, it's so simple meditation, and to some degree you're able to kind of notice what goes on internally, we start seeing some of the patterns in how we, what we pay attention to, what we think is important. Patterns of what we think about. Some people, you know, it's amazing how repetitive human beings are in their thinking. But usually we don't notice it because we're not tracking it so well. But you sit and meditate, and you might not notice that you're repeating the same thought pattern the first 25 times, but after the 100th time that you're reviewing the same, making the same plans for the same event, or remembering this event again, having the conversation over again, at some point you realize, wow. And this is one of the advantages of being going on a meditation retreat, is you know, you're undistracted from your distractions. So you start seeing how repetitive they are. It's like, Jesus, you know, I've done this now 100 times. You know, what value is this? And so you start seeing that, oh, I'm really interested in this particular plan. I'm really interested in this particular memory. And there's a selection process of gone. So one of the important things in practice is start seeing the selection process, seeing what we validate, seeing what we think is important, seeing the what kind of blinders we have, seeing what kind of selection process we have, the framework in which we enter into a situation, the attitudes that we bring with us that affect, give us a lens through which we see the situation. And one of the possibilities of meditation practice, an additional possibility, is to get calm and relaxed enough, still enough in meditation, so that you have a contrast with what you usually do. And then as you come out of your meditation session, that might be the most important time for the practice, not the meditation itself, but to use the calm, relaxed state you're in to notice what you pick up, to notice that you were calm and everything was fine, and then notice that when you open your eyes, you start looking around your house to see things that have to be done. I got to do these things. And you start noticing you have this very strong drive to take care of things, to do things. And, you know, and you didn't notice what a drive it is and the cost it has in our system until you were relaxed enough and you saw the contrast, how you picked it up. So this is a long way of saying that traditionally in mindfulness practice, there are four frames of reference, four frameworks which to look at our experience. It doesn't mean our experience has to be different than what it is, but there are four perspectives on our orientations that are considered to be very helpful for the path of liberation. And these are called the four foundations of mindfulness. So no matter what is happening, you can look at it from the point of view, how is this being experienced in my body? Almost everything we experience, we sense and feel and think and do, this has a physical corollary. So it's kind of tune into that. And there's a lot of information in our body. If we're not tuned into our body, that information is not available. There's a kind of intimacy to what goes on. And the body is kind of the doorway into going deeper. And one way to go deeper is to is that all our experiences in our body are made up of sensations. And the second framework is the feeling tone of those sensations, whether they're pleasant or unpleasant, or neither pleasant or unpleasant. Very simple hedonic tone of our experience. It's quite amazing. It seems like maybe a simplistic, reductionistic, uninteresting thing to just be connected to the hedonic tone of our experience, pleasant or unpleasant. But it turns out that the hedonic tone is often at the pivot of how we behave, what we think, how we react. And to be there right at that pivot point gives us a lot of power, a lot of choice in the matter. As we go into this feeling tone of our sensations, the Buddha pointed out that there are two categories of sensations that we have, and that One has to do with those sensations that happen only because the senses are being stimulated, the physical senses are being stimulated. And then there's this, you know, the ordinary stimulation. And then there's those sensations in the body that arise because of what's happening in the mind. So if you might have that experience of meditating and you think about how horrible your high school prom was, or some high school lover, you know, jilted you. And you were sitting 50 years ago, right? And a long time ago, you're sitting meditating, minding your own business, and this thought arises. And based on that thought, all this heat rises up. And so there's an inner sensation, not because of something in the world right now, but it arises because of the mind. And or if you sit and get concentrated in meditation, a lot of pleasant sensation arises in the body. And so those are very pleasant, and that's considered to be not of the usual, you know, it's kind of the inner world that's showing itself. And so a frame of reference then is the inner world and how it feels. And as we tune into how the inner world feels, not the surface, but deeper inside in the heart or in inner life, what's your inner life like in any situation you're in? Sometimes it's completely different and independent of what's happening out there. Sometimes it's completely entangled in what's out there. And as we begin tuning into the inner reference point of our sensations and the feeling tone, then it gives us access to the third foundation, third framework, it's very useful to notice the state of your mind, the state of your heart, the general mood that you're in. And that gives you a lot of information. And it's easy to lose touch with that. And then as you become aware of the mood, the state of the mind, then you can go deeper in and to the where it's more intimate, more into the core of who you are, which has to do with the inner ways in which your mind acts and reacts, what you choose to hold on to and what you choose to let go of, what you choose to fixate on, what you choose not to fixate on. And as it gets quieter and quieter, the framework of these mental processes that get us caught and get us free become a very important framework to look at. So if you go out and have some challenging relationship with someone else, you can get lost in reviewing the situation and he did, she did, and what should I do, and what do they think about me, and get lost in the story. From the point of view of mindfulness practice, a very effective thing is to look at that whole experience through these four frameworks. Step away from the story-making mind. How does it feel here in the body? What are the feeling tones? What's the state of mind? And what are my mental processes that are operating that help me to get caught or help me be free of this situation right here? If you reframe how you relate to the experience through these four frameworks, you'll have very different results and probably more useful results in the long term than if you stay in the old framework where you're lost from really being in touch with yourself. So these are the framework for coming, going in, and then from that inner place, coming out in a more open, effective way. So you might look at the frameworks that you have, reference points you use, and you might experiment with these four the Buddha gave and see how that changes your relationship to what's going on if you have that information that those four frameworks give, the four foundations of mindfulness. Okay. So thank you. So now we have...